Hello, my name is Paul Weatherly, and this is an introduction to Chapter 11, Does Business Have Too Much Power? The chapter involves two ideas. One is that business does have power in society, and secondly, this raises the question of does it have too much power? Should we be concerned about the power of business? And what does it mean for the idea that we live in a democracy where power is in the hands of the people? We're used to thinking about business and the market in terms of production and exchange, but it also can be seen as a framework of economic or corporate power. At one level, the notion that businesses and business leaders exercise power seems very obvious and not a surprising idea. In the chapter, we look at a study published in Forbes magazine, which looks at the top 74 most powerful individuals in the world. And according to that study, just over half of these 74 powerful individuals were from the corporate sector, including many familiar global brands such as Walmart, Google, ExxonMobil, News Corporation, Amazon, Apple, Goldman Sachs, and so on. So the list, whatever we think about the particular methodology of the study, the list makes the point that power is in the hands of business as well as government. Most of the other individuals in the top 74 most powerful people in the world being government leaders of various kinds. So what is power? Well, power can be thought of in two ways. Firstly, we normally tend to think about power in terms of the power to influence or control decisions and to make things happen in line with your own goals or interests. And that's often called power too. But that's related to another dimension of power, which is power over the behaviour of others to influence or control their decisions and actions in line with your own goals or purposes. So in this chapter, we look at the power of business in a capitalist or market system. And we look at this in three ways. We look at the relationships that businesses have with the direct stakeholders, such as customers, suppliers, and employees. We also look at relations with indirect stakeholders, such as pressure groups in society, groups that might be representing, for example, consumer interests. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, we look at relationships between business and government, and the way businesses participate in the political arena and try to influence government decisions or policies. So this is what we might call corporate political power. When we think about relations with direct stakeholders, customers, suppliers, and employees, these are all relationships involving market exchange, buying and selling. And here we can think about the power exercised by businesses in terms of bargaining power, power in the marketplace, involving having more bargaining power than the customer, the supplier, or the employee. And in the case of employees, of course, the power of business is also exercised in the form of managerial power or authority in the workplace. As in all cases of power, these relationships are two-way. When we say that power is exercised by business, that's not to say that employees or customers or suppliers don't exercise any power of their own. In all of these relationships, power is exercised within an environment or a context shaped by the legal framework of regulation, for example, employee protection or consumer protection. Therefore, businesses and these stakeholders all have an interest in trying to influence political decisions in their own favour. So this raises the question of political power, and especially in this chapter, the political power of business. In a democracy, the participation of business in the political arena, in politics, is perfectly legitimate. Businesses are entitled to try to ensure that governments listen to their interests and hear their voice, just as other groups in society are. But the question is, how much political influence do businesses have? And do they exercise too much power? In the chapter, we look at some of the evidence, some studies that have looked at business political influence or business political power. One author argues that corporate and financial elites have inserted themselves into the heart of government over successive administrations and exercise a predominant influence over it, even going so far as to speak about businesses as constituting an unelected oligarchy or ruling elite. Looking at the ways in which business exercises or seeks to exercise political influence, two ideas are involved, or two mechanisms. One is the idea that businesses have an advantage in the electoral process and the representation of group interests. So business as a political actor, taking actions to try to influence government policy and decisions. This can take the form, for example, of funding for political parties or think tanks that advance the corporate agenda or corporate interests, and lobbying of government. Also under this category, the chapter considers what's often called the phenomenon of revolving doors, where people from the private sector might move into government and vice versa, allowing a kind of channel of influence between the two sectors. A second mechanism that we consider in the chapter is described by one author as control without trying. And the idea here is that governments are dependent on decisions taken in the private sector to ensure a healthy economic performance. So governments have to ensure that businesses invest and create jobs in order to increase living standards in society. And they depend on these kinds of decisions in order to maintain popular support and to get re-elected. And because of this dependence on business decisions to ensure a healthy economic performance, it means that governments have to pursue policies that maintain business confidence to ensure that businesses continue to invest, create jobs, and so on. So this means that businesses can be fairly confident in normal circumstances that governments will take account of their interests in order to maintain business confidence, even if businesses aren't engaging in actions such as lobbying or financing political parties and so on. So that's called control without trying. So on the basis of these kinds of arguments and evidence, the chapter shows that businesses do indeed exert a considerable degree of influence over governments in Western democracies. And this power, this influence, may indeed be enhanced by globalization because of the way globalization provides opportunities for businesses to relocate elsewhere if they don't have confidence in the policies being implemented by the government in the country in which they're currently doing business. However, this is not to say that businesses alone exercise influence over government. Clearly, in a democracy, other groups also seek to influence government policies, and government policies are shaped, of course, by electoral competition and the electoral process. And most authors, such as Lynn Blom, although arguing that businesses do exercise predominant power, recognise that it also varies, that it waxes and wanes over time. So, the chapter argues that the market can be seen as a framework of power, not just as a framework of exchange and production, and looks particularly at the power of business, and in particular business as a political actor. Businesses need to have an effective voice in political debate, and that's perfectly legitimate in a democracy, but there are good reasons to be concerned about the extent of business political influence.